I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
Imagine living in a cubicle larger than some people's closets for all those years, and they finally are able to walk out of there. For me, it was unbelievable that this was actually happening to me. But, I mean, the feeling of, wow, I can go, wow, I'll be home.
In this Democracy Now! Special, we spend the hour with longtime Indigenous leader Leonard Peltier. In February, he was released from federal prison in Florida after spending nearly 50 years behind bars for a crime he says he did not commit. President Biden, on his final day in office, commuted Peltier's sentence to home confinement. We'll speak to Leonard Peltier about his life of resistance, from attending an Indian boarding school as a child to his years with the American Indian Movement, AIM, to his life in prison. We interviewed him at his home on his 81st birthday weekend.
What really kept me strong was my anger. I was extremely angry about what they did to me and my people.
We'll also speak to Leonard Peltier's daughter, Marquita Shields Peltier. She was just a toddler when her father was imprisoned in 1976. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In this special broadcast, we spend the hour with longtime Indigenous activist Leonard Peltier. In February, he was released from a federal prison in Florida after spending nearly half a century behind bars for a crime he says he did not commit. President Biden, on his last day in office, commuted Peltier's life sentence to home confinement. Biden's decision followed mounting calls by tribal leaders and supporters around the world in a decades-long community-led campaign fighting for his freedom. In the 1970s, Peltier was involved with the American Indian Movement, known as AIM. In 1975, two FBI agents and one young AIM activist were killed in a shootout on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. Two AIM members were later arrested for killing the agents. At the trial, the jury acquitted them. Leonard Peltier was arrested later, tried separately, and convicted. Peltier has always maintained his innocence. Notable supporters of Leonard Peltier over the years have included South African President Nelson Mandela, Pope Francis, and Amnesty International. Supporters of Peltier say his trial was marked by gross FBI and federal prosecutorial misconduct, including the coercion of witnesses, fabricated testimony, and suppressed exculpatory evidence. After being released in February, Leonard Peltier returned home to live on the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Reservation in Belcourt, North Dakota. On September 12th, Leonard Peltier celebrated his 81st birthday. People gathered throughout the day, visiting him and calling from around the world to celebrate. That night and the next day, we spoke to Leonard Peltier in his living room in his first extended TV radio broadcast interview since his release from prison. Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, in the home of Leonard Peltier, just recently freed from prison after 49 years.
Plus 2 months.
Plus 2 months. I have spoken to you so many times, Leonard, in prison, in various prisons, several of them supermax prisons. It is quite astonishing to be here with you in person. Tell us where we are. Where are we sitting?
We're sitting in my home that was given to me by my supporters. This was not given to me by the tribe or the government had nothing to do with it. I was released by Biden under commutation of my sentence and home confinement. Actually, what happened was I was taken out of one prison cell and really put into another type of prison. But this is my home now. This is my home. So it's a million times better.
Wait, what do you mean when you say you were taken out of your prison cell after more than 49 years, mm-hmm. and you're saying that you're not completely free?
No. I'm on very restrictive restrictions. Even to go to the post office, I got to call my handler. I have to call her to go to the post office. Then when I get back, I have to call her and tell her I'm back. Or if I go anything, if I go shopping or whatever, I have to do that. If I have to go 100 miles past the nation, I don't call my place a reservation either. It's where nations of people. I have to get a pass, usually from Washington, D.C., to go to the medical, usually medical or religious ceremonies on different Native nations.
So let's go back to that moment when you were in that prison cell in Coleman in Florida, and you got word that President Biden had commuted your sentence. It was just hours before he was leaving office. Can you tell us about that process, how it took place?
Well, as I went through the years filing for pardons and stuff, Ronald Reagan was the first one to promise to leave me, pardon me. Somebody in Washington stopped it. There's only one organization that could have stopped it and didn't have the power to stop it, but still somehow are in power enough to where they can override the President of the United States, our Congress. It's the FBI. And Reagan promised to let me go, and the FBI intervened, and that was stopped. And Bill Clinton and Obama, and finally we get to Biden. And Biden, there was pressure put on him from all over the world. Almost every tribal nation here in the United States filed for my release, demanding my release. The United Nations. The United Nations did a full report on my case, and they demanded that I be released immediately and to be paid, quote unquote. Hundreds of Congress and senators and millions of people.
Then the Pope.
And the Pope. The last Pope and the current Pope. And world leaders, many world leaders, demanded my release.
The Nobel Peace Laureate, Archbishop Desmond Tutu?
Yes, I was also nominated nominated four times because of my work from prisons for a Nobel Prize. And the board and everything granted it, but somebody intervened again. So four times I lost that. I think somebody was pushing Biden to stop any possibility of signing a pardon. So he didn't sign it until the last moment. And actually, a day and a half before he actually signed it and his term was completed, I just took that position that, he's not going to do this. And I just kind of laid back in my cell and I thought to myself, well, I guess I die here. And this is the only ultimate sacrifice I can make. And I have to accept it. I have no other choice. And as I laid there and thinking about it, other people came by, even guards, would tell me, don't give up, Leonard, don't give up. And other prisoners, and some of them prisoners were telling me that, Leonard, he's got to know that if he doesn't sign this, this is political suicide for the Democratic Party, because there's millions of people that are going to break away from this. if he doesn't. And so I was laying there and I was thinking, well, let's try one more thing. So I called a representative of mine that was working closely with the Biden administration. We had Native people in the administration who were communicating with Biden. And I said, tell him to give me a commutation on my sentence and home confinement. So she called and did this, and that's what I ended up with. And that's what I'm living under right now.
How did you hear that you were going to be free?
Well, it was kind of unbelievable in the immediate moment. I thought somebody was just playing games with me, and I thought, I'm going to wake up and this is all a dream. And I'm in this cell, and I'll be in there. And I really didn't believe until, actually, I walked in the house here.
What was it like to leave Coleman?
Wow. Imagine living in a cubicle larger than some people's closets for all those years, and they finally are able to walk out of there. I mean, it was just, for me, it was unbelievable that this was actually happening to me. But, I mean, the feeling of, wow, I can go, wow, I'll be home, I won't be able to, I won't have to go to bed in this cold cell with one blanket, and I won't have to smell my cellie going to the bathroom. I won't have to eat cold meals. Is this really over for me? Is this really going to be over for me? And it was disbelief. A lot of it was disbelief, really.
And now we're sitting here in your living room, surrounded by the paintings you did in prison.
Yes.
You are an artist extraordinaire, maybe about to have a gallery showing in New York. Through the years, you sold your paintings. Mm-hmm. Talk about painting in prison and how you came to be a painter.
Well, see, a lot of people think we were allowed to paint in our cells and stuff. We were not. We were not allowed. They had an art room, hobbycraft area, and one of the hobbycrafts was painting. So you have to sign up for that. A lot of people think that all the art supplies was given to you by the prison, the hobbycrafter. That's not true either. We had to buy our own. And I went and signed up immediately to go into the art hobbycraft. And I used to go there every day. And that's what I did. I painted and painted and painted until I was able to create my own style and everything. Yeah.
Can you see your paintings now?
No, I 2 months ago, I think now, I lost 80% of my vision. And I'm in the process of hopefully get my eyesight treated and returned.
We're spending the hour with the indigenous leader, longtime political prisoner Leonard Peltier. He was released in February from prison after nearly half a century behind bars. Coming up, he talks about being put in an Indian boarding school as a child, his activism, and more. We'll also speak with his daughter, Marquita Shields Peltier. She was just a toddler when her father was imprisoned in 1976.
And life will flow as long as the grass grows and the water runs. And while I'm here on earth, I rejoice and it's worth. Cause straight on the street, freedom is free. On display, but you can't control how I feel, no way. Cause freedom is free.
is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We're continuing with our conversation with longtime Indigenous activist Leonard Peltier in Belcourt, North Dakota. I spoke to him there on his 81st birthday weekend on the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Cree Reservation. He was released in February from the federal prison in Florida after nearly half a century behind bars.
So take us back in time. Introduce us to you, starting by saying your name, who your parents were, the nations they were a part of, your family, where you lived growing up.
Okay. English name is Leonard Peltier. I'm 81 years old as of yesterday. My father is a Chippewa Cree from this reservation, this nation right here. I keep saying reservations because we was taught from childhood that we are all reservations. We're Indians, and we're not Indians. And this is not a reservation. We made treaties with the United States government, and the Constitution says they shall only make treaties with sovereign nations. So we're sovereign nations. We're not Indians, as they claim to be, as they claim we are. And my mother's from Fort Totten, but again, that's not the real name. The real name is Spirit Lake. And that's of the Lakota, Dakota people. I was raised majority of my life here with my grandparents, which is usually the traditional way of my people. The grandparents will take the children and raise them. But when grandpa died, grandma had no way to support us. So she went to the agency here to ask for help. And in retaliation, they took us and put us in a boarding school.
What boarding school?
Wapton, North Dakota, 1953. I was there till 1950 for 3 years, 56, and it was extremely brutal conditions.
How old were you?
I was 9 then when I went. And,
talk about the point of these boarding schools. Was your haircut? Did they stop you from speaking your language?
They did. That was the purpose of the schools, is to take the Indian out of the Indian. Is what they literally was the order. They took us to the boarding schools. The first thing they did was cut all our buzz cut our hair, took it all off, and then we put us and took us into the shower. We showered and we come out of the shower, and we reported all over our bodies DDT. As you know, that's poisonous.
They poured DDT over your body?
DDT with all the cans on your head and the whole body. And then they gave us an issue of clothes and bedding and assigned us to a bed. And that was the beginning of our treatment. It was extremely, extremely strict school. And beatings were regular for any little violation of those rules. I might have been a little hot-headed, I don't know. But when I first got there, there was a group that called themselves the Resistors. And I immediately joined them, and I became part of the Resistors. So we would sneak behind the gymnasium, and we would talk our language. We would sing some song, even do some prayers. Yeah. And if we got caught, we got the beat out of us.
You wrote in your book, Prison Writings, My Life is My Sundance, that you consider these boarding schools your first imprisonment.
Yes, it was. I found the rules more restrictive than when I went to end up in prison.
So you go to this residential school with your cousin and sister for 3 years. Where do you come back to? And how did you maintain your language and your culture?
Well, I came back here to live with my father. And they were still living in log cabins, no electricity. No running water. We had to haul water. We had to haul wood. And we only had $55 to live on, which was my father's World War II military benefits. And that's what we had to live on. And we were facing the time of termination. The United States government wrote a bill passed by Congress, signed by the president, of termination. In 1956, it was supposed to be completed by 1985. And the first one to be terminated was the Menominee Indians of Wisconsin. They had millions of prime land, timber, and lakes to make hunting lodges and other things out there. It was beautiful, which they did today. They got it, all those things out there today. But they came and took all that land from them. Then they come here in 1958. Was it 58? Yeah, 58. I was 13 years old then. And they came and told us, we have been terminated and we have to accept it. We were supposed to be the second reservation to be terminated.
The Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Cree.
Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Cree, yes. And my father and all of them and their generation, a lot of people left on relocation. They said, it's hopeless. We can't fight these people. They're too powerful. They're just too powerful. It's, you know, maybe life will be better over there and stuff like this on this relocation. So they picked this city to go to. A lot of them went to Washington State and Oregon. And it was a small group of us stayed here and said, no, we're not leaving. So my dad and his generation said, well, what do you mean, been terminated? You can't come here and tell us that we got to leave and you're going to just terminate us as a race of people and tell us that we no longer exist? Go f*** yourself. Come on, let's fight it out. And literally, they were. I was proud of them. I was 13 years old. They stopped all provisions. One little girl died over here from malnutrition, and that's what really got everybody angry.
So they thought they would starve you out.
Yeah, they were making conditions so hard that we were accepting termination. We were leaving. There, a lot of people took it. Well, at least my kids won't starve to death.
And the BIA reversed its decision?
They reversed their decision and gave us $50 vouchers to go buy groceries here in Rolla. Everybody got, the whole reservation got $50.
And they didn't disband the
No, they got the hell out of it because we told them we were going to fight them.
So this was really the beginning of the Red Power movement and the founding of AIM.
Well, right? I guess so, in so many ways.
The American Indian movement, which you want to rename the American.
But they were doing that for, I mean, my people have been fighting back for 500 years, Amy.
But the modern day.
Yeah, the modern day stuff. But no, we went to war with them. We went to all kinds of different levels of
resistance,
you know.
So talk about the founding of AIM, the American Indian Movement, which you today would like to rename the American Indigenous
Movement. Well, I was involved in a number of different organizations before I joined AIM. And one of the biggest ones that I was, I helped organize the United Tribes of All Indians in Washington State. And we took over Fort Lawton. That one of the treaties that we were pushing them days, actually our people, was older people were pushing this too, but they just passed. All of our knowledge came from traditionalists. That's with policies, the American Indian Movement. We followed there. First of all, people got to understand, the American Indian Movement policy is they can't come onto this reservation and start dictating their policy. They have to be invited by the traditionalists or tribal government or what else. We can't just go onto a reservation and say, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. No, we can't do that, and we don't do that. We have to be invited first. So anyway, this was before I joined the American Indian Movement. I was involved with the fishing and hunting struggles over there. That was a big area that they really fought hard and got really...
Fishing and hunting rights.
Yes, treaty rights. In fact, Marlon Brando got arrested with us in 1955. He got arrested on one of them lakes. I wasn't there, but he got arrested fishing and hunting with the natives out there.
So talk about the occupation of the BIA offices in Washington, moving on to Wounded Knee in Pine Ridge.
Well, it just our resistance became extremely popular. American Indian movement was growing, and not just here in America, Canada, Central America. See, a lot of full bloods. Ultra Central America, more than here in the United States, and we were uniting with all of them, all those natives across this country, across this whole continent. I mean, and we were uniting, we were pulling together with the American Indian. That's why we became a threat to the government. So, later on when I was arrested, after I got arrested. This one guy was telling me, he said, yeah, I just went down to Mexico someplace, one of the towns. And he said they were organizing resistance and stuff like this. He said, I was down there visiting him. He said, I went to this guy told me he was some kind of medicine man or something. So I went down there and visited him. He said, I went into his place. And to his, he had a kind of a hut like home, I guess. And he said, what do I see? He said, I see your poster on one of the walls. That's so far back. We went through all that stuff. And
But especially for young people to understand, I mean, you're talking about this critical moment of
60s, actually.
What's that?
Started in the 60s, really.
And also the height of the anti-war movement. Mm-hmm. And the role and the effect of the anti-war movement on the Native American movement and vice versa. If you can talk about those critical moments.
A lot of us natives were also involved in the peace marches and... With the blacks and the anti-war movements and things like that, we were involved in all that stuff too. But we were working on trying to get their support, and they were working on trying to get our support. Then the hippies came out, and the hippies really helped us. The hippies did a lot to help us. They started dressing like natives. They started doing things like native people, and a lot of them came from very, very wealthy families. A lot of people hated them. That's for one of the reasons the government hated them, is because they were really pushing the native issues, you know, culture and stuff like that.
So the Trail of Broken Treaties, that was 1972. Explain what it is, which was a takeoff the Trail of...
We knew that we had to get to... get the government to start honoring our treaties, because they never honored our treaties. And the only way we could do this is to go right straight to Washington. And so we organized a group called the Trail of Broken Treaties. And we all organized from all over the country. They sent representatives in old cars. We had nobody had new cars in them days. And we all went to Washington.
You went?
Of course I did. Of course I was there too, yeah.
This is, of course, a takeoff on the Trail of Tears. And most people in our schools, and maybe less so especially now, will ever even know what the Trail of Tears was.
Right, precisely. That was all past. Everything we did, we called it, well, like the Trail of Broken Treaties, that was done under the Trail of Tears and the Long Walk, all the other events like that that happened. It wasn't just the Trail of Tears, as people have to understand. The Trail of Tears was just one of them that